Ward, President of Demographics, Inc.
That's right.
June 10th, 1974. Conway, Arkansas.
Not for attribution.
When did you get started in politics?
I really got started in 1968. I had been active in the gubernatorial campaign in 1966, but 68 was really when I became actively engaged in politics. And about that same time, I started a firm called Demographics. It was not Demographics, it was just I just used a computer I had at night to write computer letters. Once Rockefeller, when he was governor and prior to the time, had probably the most sophisticated direct mail, computerized direct mail operation in the United States. And there was literally no one that you could go to compete in the state. So I started my business as sort of the Democratic answer in the state of Arkansas to Winthrop Rockefeller's business. It has since grown, as Walter knows, to much larger business than just an Arkansas business. But that's really how I got started. I've been personally interested, but that's how I got started in politics.
Are you involved beyond that in politics?
Well, I'm involved in two different areas of politics. One, I'm personally involved in politics in that I'm the national committeeman from the state of Arkansas. I'm a member of the executive committee of the national committee, and I'm very involved personally in helping candidates and doing what I can to help the Democratic Party. I also am a part owner of a company called Demographics, which does political direct mail. Polling, that sort of thing.
You do polling as well?
Yes.
And am I correct, you work frequently and closely with DeLoss Walker?
Yes, we worked, DeLoss and I started in 1968 together. The very first candidate that I ever worked for in the area of computers, and I did it myself at night, was Bill Alexander, Congressman Alexander. And that's when I first met DeLoss Walker. We subsequently have done work with him in several campaigns. Most obvious is the Bumpers campaign.
And then, am I correct, you worked in Eastland's campaign?
I'm sure we did. First of all, I would have to tell you that I spend very little time in demographics, and really, unless it's a major job that requires some that they feel they need my advice on, I really have no idea about the day-to-day workings anymore of demographics, and I haven't for 2 or 3 years.
So, in the 68 campaign, yours was primarily with technical aspects of the
That's right. In 70, I got more involved in it because the business was just getting started and we lost a lot of money in it. And I became very involved after losing a considerable amount of money. But now I have 4 or 5 professionals that run that business. I'm primarily a school bus manufacturer. And I'm president of the largest school bus manufacturing firm in the United States. And that is a full-time job. So, although I'm a stockholder in demographics, I spend no more than 5% of my time in that business. I'm really not that actively involved in, if you want to say, the mechanical aspects of politics or working as a consultant. I spend much more of my time as national committeeman and on the executive committee and different things I'm involved in the national committee.
How do you assess the structure of the Democratic Party in in Arkansas?
Well, the Democratic Party in Arkansas is a very loosely structured party, a state party's goal across the country, and I think it's true primarily because we have a number of very strong members in our party, such as John McClellan, Fulbright, Bumpers, Mills, and others who have always been, in my opinion, very suspicious of too much strength in our state party. And for all of their own reasons, the state party has never become a very heavily funded organization and has never been really effective as a campaigning vehicle. That's partially true. The other reason probably is because the Republican Party never has been a threat to the Democratic Party here. When Winthrop Rockefeller was here, it was more personality party, as far as I'm concerned. It's proven to be true. Only when he ran and put his money into it was there ever any Republican Party in this state. So I think those are the two reasons we have a very loosely structured party in this state.
Do you see that changing, particularly in as far as the Democratic Party?
I do not. I do not see the, I see no, are you talking about statewide or nationally?
Statewide.
I see no change in the status of the Democratic Party in this state. I think as long as you have these people as elected officials, it will continue to be a loose organization, and I'm not too sure I oppose that too much. There are many things that are done in states that have strong parties that I disagree with, such as Ohio, where they actually endorse candidates. Colorado, I mean, they do it many different ways in different states, but they endorse candidates in the primaries. I think that, in my opinion, is weakens the party ultimately, and I think, you know, they just saw that in Ohio recently when John Glenn won against the endorsed candidate. So I'm not too sure I oppose that, and I do not envision any change in our state party.
Charles, what do you see as the, what is going to have to happen for Arkansas and the South, other states in the South, to go Democratic again in a presidential election?
Well, the most obvious thing, obviously, would be a candidate that was a little more appealing to the Southern constituency. For a lot of reasons, it's obvious that George McGovern was not very appealing. I think there were many false things said about George McGovern. I think he was painted as far more liberal than he really was, and there were so many things, didn't get very much vote in this state. And in 68, Wallace was a big factor here, carried the state. And I think that certainly if Wallace were a third party candidate, it would be harder for us to carry the state for a Democrat. And I think Wallace needs to stay in the party for us to carry the state. In '76.
You're not talking about being on the ticket.
Stay in party. I particularly think that George Wallace, if he's treated with respect and the respect that he's due, will stay hitched in the party. A lot of people think he's going to go away, and a lot of people think that a third party candidacy by Wallace in 76 might actually aid the Democrats. I have thought about it a lot, and I do not see it that way at all. Many people think, for instance, that he would take more votes away from Ford than he would away against Kennedy. I do not agree with that.
Do you agree that he took away more from Nixon than he did from Humphrey? In 68.
Well, yeah, I think he did in this state. And it would have been very hard. No one really knows for sure how the state would have gone in 68. And anything you say is conjecture. But it is my conjecture that he took away or from Nixon, and we probably would have gone Republican in 68 had it not been for George Wallace.
But you think it'd be different in 76?
Yeah, I do.
How do you think Kennedy could carry Arkansas if he gets the nomination?
Well, a lot can happen between now and 76, but I think it would be difficult to carry the state for Senator Kennedy. That's just my feeling in talking to people around the state. And it would be difficult to carry. A lot would have to do with the running mate he had.
I presume if he had bumpers as his running mate, he'd have a very good chance.
I think you'd carry many other states in the South. I think with Wallace as his running mate, you could carry Arkansas and many other states in the South.
How about Aspen?
I really don't think that Askew is a vote getter, and I don't know what his busing stand, particularly in this state, would not be helpful. That said, truly as one of the bus builders, you understand that I take some teasing because of my avocation. But I'm candidly saying I just don't think that that Askew has either the proven vote-getting ability or the recognition of the name. You know, you have George Wallace, who's a proven, he has a constituency, and you've got Bumpers, who not only everyone's excited now about the Fulbright thing, but you got to remember, you have to go back and analyze his races against Winthrop Rockefeller, who'd been elected twice convincingly, and he was just not defeated. We beat him almost as bad. Well, it was 2-1 against Rockefeller. And he beat Oliver Faubus 56-44. And Faubus had all the machinery behind him and most of the money. And so he's got a, Bumpers has a proven record as a vote getter that far exceeds Reuben Askew's, even though I realize that Askew's from a bigger state. But I would say right now that he'd have more chance. But I will freely admit to being biased in that area. I'm a great fan of Bumpers.
Where would you place the Arkansas Democratic State Party in comparison to the other parties in the southern states, the 11 states of the Old Confederacy, in terms of organization, funding, candidate recruitment, and so on?
Well, first of all, I would hesitate to set myself up as an authority in that area. There's many states I have no idea about. I know a lot of people, a lot of candidates, a lot of people involved, but insofar as knowing the basics of how the parties are organized and what they're doing, I would profess ignorance. And, you know,
what's your perception? You many, many some states. Feeling of it.
Well,
say as compared to Louisiana and Mississippi and Georgia.
I think you have to analyze. I would just, well, it's stronger than Mississippi. How's that?
I thought it was an excellent analysis.
I don't.
What I'm trying to get at, I mean, are you basically satisfied with the way it is, or would you want to change it? Would you want to go to party registration? Would you want more staff? I mean, Or are you basically satisfied with
that? I'm basically satisfied with what we have, and I see absolutely no reason to want to change what we have. And I would say that based on one thing. I don't think you'll find any state party in the South that has a higher percentage of elected officials. You know, we've got, I think, one man in the state Senate, or maybe one representative in the state. Anyway, they've only got one elected officeholder at the state house, and they got one congressman, and that's it. And, you know, and in this election this fall, they'll be lucky to get 20% of the vote. So I don't know what more we could do except the presidential election. Obviously, I'd like to do much better there, but I don't think if we'd have had the best organization in the world last time, that we could have carried this state for George McGovern. We'd have had, you know, the best people in the country here. I just don't think there's anything we can do about that. And I really... to say that there are two or three things. If you got a really strong state organization, and maybe I'm being too kind, I should say a machine, which is what they turn into in many times, in many cases, it becomes almost impossible for somebody like Dale Bumpers to come from a little town in Charleston, Arkansas, and be governor of the state. And I think that many people, I'm committed to having our process as free and open as possible and getting everybody a chance to run. And I think as soon as you know, they say you've got to have a strong party because you've got to recruit good candidates, because, you know, I think that's just another word for machine as far as I'm concerned. And in many, many cases, you'll find that that's true. If you study the way the party apparatus is set up and you get one strong man in the state and he takes it over and he tries to run and he tries to decide who is going to be the nominee for the Senate, and who are going to run, who the candidates are for Congress, and it gets away from simple recruitment of candidates, more into someone deciding who's going to be allowed to run. And for that reason, for two reasons, we're doing very well in this state, and I like the openness of the way our party is set up. I would favor leaving it just as it is right now.
Wasn't one of the significant impacts of the four Rockefeller years the fact that it did open up the Democratic Party, did change it around, did move it from a sort of machine of the Faubus days?
Well, I think there's no doubt that Orville Faubus had a machine in Arkansas, and it was the first time such a machine had existed. And in my lifetime, he's been governor since like 20 years ago, and I'm 34 years old, so. He started when I was 14 years old, but I certainly think that Rockefeller's tenure did a great deal. And you know, the first time around, you had a fellow from Conway named Jim Johnson who ran, and then the next time around, you had the real machine candidate, Marion Crank, who was a former employee of Arkansas Louisiana Gas. He ran, and he got beat, and they tried again with Faubus. But we had our opening at that point, and Bumpers got the nomination, and I think there's been a great move put to include more people in politics, and I hope that we don't go back in machine politics.
How did you get involved in the Bumpers campaign in '70?
He came to see me. I was disillusioned with the candidates we had. And most everybody was lining up. Most people I knew were lining up behind Orville Faubus. And I really did not want to see our state go back to Orville Faubus. I thought it would be, you know, I never really had that many problems with Faubus as an administrator, as a man who did well for the state. I had great problems with him because of the image he portrayed, and because anywhere you go in the United States, they think Orville Faubus, they think Little Rock, 1957. He closed the schools and you know, we're going to take the state back. So I opposed him in '70, and I really didn't know who I was going to support. And the ABC affiliate ran us, gave all the candidates 20 minutes free time the day the filing closed to say why they were running for governor. And I watched them, and I saw Bumpers. And my friend Walker had already signed up to handle him.
And I'd already told Walker he must be crazy, you know, to handle a guy. The guy, you know, said, what has Bumpers done? Well, he's never done anything, really. He didn't tell me that he ran for representative and lost. But, you know, he's an attorney and he's, you know. But I watched him on television and I decided that he was going to be the best candidate and he was a man that I could support. And he came to see me down in the Office of Demographics. I was sitting over there and he came in and we talked and I told him I was his supporter and that was how I got started with him.
What was it about him that attracted you?
Well, now that's the question of the night, I guess, because that's what everybody wants to know. And maybe his attraction to me was a little different. I thought he came across well on television, first of all. I liked him, but I also thought he was electable. And I thought he was someone that possibly could beat Orville Faubus in that race. And I liked his candor and his sincereness, and I liked the way he projected on television. And that's...
You had never seen him before.
I'd never seen him.
Never heard of him before.
Never heard of him before. Just except when DeLoss Walker told me that he was probably going to... and I didn't know DeLoss that well at that point. He and I had worked on one campaign together.
And how about when he came to see you? What sort of impression did he make? You know, frequently guys, somebody on television is one thing, and in person, frequently there's something else. Did you find Bumpers to be something else than what he showed on television?
No, I found him to be, of course, I had my mind made up fairly well, and it really surprised him. He came, I think he just wanted some financial support or something out of me. And I really don't think that he ever really thought that I would say, you know, I'm for you, Dale Bumpers, in this race for governor. And at that point in time, his staff consisted of Archie Schaefer and himself. Archie was his driver, and that was the team. And then they had about three people in Little Rock, and he had no staff or anything. And but I liked him, and I didn't really know that much about him. But I knew a lot about a lot of the other people in the race. And I think that at that point, that probably helped him in a lot of areas. I mean, as it turned out, there was really not anything bad to know about him, except he once preached that the Red Sea didn't part. And that was a great issue in that campaign against Faubus, when Faubus revealed that once he knew a man who had been in a Sunday school class when Bumpers was teaching. And Bumpers taught in this class that the Red Sea never really parted.
What did it do?
Well, it did about the same thing like Fulbright's deal on the duck hunting. It didn't do anything. People are not stupid, and that's something that a lot of politicians have a hard time understanding, and nobody really would have cared one way or the other if you said the Red Sea didn't part. And I just, you know.
Who was Fulbright and the duck hunting? Because I just hadn't heard that.
Oh, well.
Oh, that's in Pierce's book.
No, it's just, unless the book was published last week.
I read it in Luke Cannon's piece in the Washington Post.
Well, the Wallace people got involved in the state politics here. The man who's supposedly their state manager, his name Frank Hensler. And he was for Orville Faubus, which I could understand. I could never understand his being Fulbright. That was a little hard for me to understand. And also he was for a fellow named Doug Brandon for lieutenant governor. And it's not a matter of hearsay, because he's listed in Fulbright's reporting as having received, I think, like $1,700 or $2,700 for postage. And they sent out this 8-page newspaper. This newspaper just occurred during the campaign. I think it's called Arkansas Sportsman. And the front page of it
bumper sized proclamation endorsing the ban of hunting. In the whole thing, and it's got an article over in there by this fellow Frank Hensley, and it was just, they mailed like, I don't know how many thousand of them, but they mailed 100,000, I guess.
I remember, yeah.
So.
And Bumpers came out and said that his father had taught him to hunt when he was 12, and he had taught his son to hunt when he was 12, and he kept a dog at the mansion, a hunting dog, right?
Yeah, and they had a flyer that they came out with, shouldering Dale Bumper's holding up four ducks and says, does this look like a man who wants to ban hunting? It's just
terrific.
But anyway, both those issues were the same. They didn't really.
What did you do for him in the 70 campaign?
I worked very hard for him in the 1970 campaign. I actively worked, you know, helped put on bumper stickers, got up yard signs where I could, spent time in the state headquarters, volunteered, helped raise money, did everything I knew to do to help him be governor.
Charles, let's go back to those two stories, because I think they're kind of typical of the politics that used to win campaigns in this state, right?
Sure.
When did that really change in Arkansas? Would it change in 66 with Rockefeller's first campaign? Because it occurs to me that campaign was one of the most sophisticated ever put on any place in the country. And it was put on here in the South. And in Arkansas, it was put to one of the most backward states. And succeeded. Yet that same kind of campaign in 1970 did not succeed. Neither did the Faubus campaign, which was typical of the old style campaign. Did it succeed then or this year?
Well, I think all of the South has matured over that period of time. And I think that Rockefeller had run before, and he didn't just happen on the scene. He did have he had a terrible handicap to overcome in being a Republican in the state of Arkansas, which never had any votes as a Republican. The last time the gubernatorial candidate got 20% against, he admitted he wasn't much, but they got 20% of the vote. So and the man he ran against was an avowed segregationist that, would make Lester Maddox look like a liberal. And I just think the people were ready for change.
Yeah, but didn't Faubus try to run that same type of campaign in 70? As he did in 74?
Well, yeah, he tried to run a campaign. It was the first time he'd ever been behind the polls in a long time. And he was very uncomfortable in that position, and he reacted very poorly, and he started the thing that has run through, there's a common thread that's run through all three of the campaigns, Faubus, Rockefeller, and Fulbright, and that they all three have accused and on and on and on about Bumpers not saying anything and not addressing the issues. And what they all really have said, in effect, is that they all know that Bumpers has a lead. And about the only way they're going to beat him is get him to react to them. And he refuses to react to his opponent. He runs a positive kind of campaign. He addresses the issues that he sees them. And he addresses them to the public. He doesn't get in arguments. He moves a lot. He never stays in one place. He's talking about welfare reform this week. And when the other guy reacts to that, he's talking about inflation next week. And, he continues to develop the issues that he sees the Republic reacting to them, and he, for the most part, just ignores his opponent. And they really become very paranoid about it, because no matter, I thought they overreacted this time to the hunting thing. I thought it was they really didn't have to put out that flyer that says, does this look like a man who wants to ban hunting? But normal for people in the end of a campaign, even though the polls continually show that to, you know, become a little paranoid and get scared they're going to get hurt by something. I'm sure you've talked to Dale Enoch. Have you talked to him yet?
Yes.
Very interesting study he's doing now on the Senate race, I guess.
Well, we heard two theories on Faubus, why he did what he did in 57. One is that was his basic belief. I mean, that's what he really believes and feels. The other is that was a strategic move off of him, and that he was afraid he would not get elected as a third term as governor. And when you think about 1974, he ran the same kind of campaign again. Busing, drugs, crime.
No, well, the first theory, there wasn't so much that was the way he really felt, but that he had supposedly had some inside information that there was a real threat and a real danger.
Yeah, but the point is, once that strategy seemed to work for him, he then used it in successive re-elections.
Oh, yeah, the other theory was that this was, he saw the opportunity to create an issue on which in the future he couldn't be beat.
Yeah.
And jumped on it in 57.
Well, I'm not wait a second guessing. I can only conjecture say that's possible. If that's what he wanted to do, it worked. He was governor here for 12 years, and only one other man had ever made it three terms, and no one has ever made it since. And I think Bumpers probably could have been reelected governor with no problem, third term. But Faubus was governor, and he had a political base, and probably, if he had run again, he would have run Rockefeller a hell of a race. He might have gotten beat. He beat him once. Whether he could have beat him a second time around, we'll never know. But if that was his intent, he succeeded in it. But it's hard to say. You have to look at Wallace. You know, Wallace did the same thing, but he's adjusted. He is a politician, and he knows that the winds aren't blowing that way now, and you don't see him out beating that drum anymore. He's changed his tactics and his theories altogether. And I don't know.
How much, in your opinion, is that change in Wallace is a matter of conviction, perhaps resulting in part from changes that grew out of his personal tragedy? And how much of it is adjusting to the political realities of Alabama? And how much of it is adjusting to his perceived political realities of becoming, quote, respectable in terms of national politics?
Well, I don't think the change at all is due to his injury. From his standpoint, I think if you go back and look, that change had already been made. He had been off the segregation bandwagon a long time prior to that. But he was still tagged as a segregationist. And I think that had the attempted assassination never occurred, he would never have been able to live that down, so to speak. But that sort of the sympathy that people felt for him, and I think he gained a certain amount of respectability that allowed Charles Evers to say again today for the 92nd time that he can support him as a vice presidential nominee. But I don't think that Wallace changed so much because of that. I think people then accepted his change after the assassination attempt. What were the other parts of your question? Did I answer your?
Well, whether it grew out of his perception of new realities in Alabama politics, or
no, I don't think his primary thrust thrust for many years has been Alabama politics. He wants to keep his home base strong. But I think most all the actions he takes are primarily toward national politics. And I think that Wallace probably is one of the most perceptive political men that ever lived in the United States. He can read a crowd better. And he is a man who's very perceptive. He developed most of the issues in 72. And George McGovern didn't develop tax reform, which is one of the big issues. George Wallace developed it. And he developed it because when he gets before a crowd and he says a little something about tax reform, the crowd roars. The next time around, he talks 20 minutes about tax reform. And he reads a crowd very well, and he's a man that responds to the people. He, you know, if you ever seen pictures or anything at a rally, those people respond, and they're very strong. And he reads a crowd very well. And I think that that's the reason that he takes a lot of stands he does. I think that's why he's developed the postures in there. I mean, I don't say he has no inner feelings about this, but I know that he responds very well, and I think he develops his issues a lot.
Well, the Republican Party in Arkansas showed a certain amount of weakness in 1972 when, with Nixon carrying the state with more than 70% of the vote, they still couldn't pick up any seats in the legislature and still held their one congressional seat. How much has Watergate damaged them since then, if any?
Well, their gubernatorial candidate got 20% of the vote. Same man running again would probably get 20% of the vote, I guess. I mean, it's hard for anybody if you file. Walter can tell you more about that. If you're unknown, you file, you ought to get 20% of the vote, just almost by accident. So they don't really have that much to lose. The only thing you'll be able to tell by when this race is over is John Paul Hammersmith, the congressman, is really, I guess you could by the margin of their defeat, but they really don't have anybody to defeat except Hammersmith. So it's hard to say. I can't see that they're really a factor at all in state politics.
Well, what we find strange is that here you got a Republican governor for 4 years, put a ton of money into the party, organization, candidates, and all that. And yet today they're back where they were, or even worse off. We got one in the Senate, one in the House, and one congressman.
That's right.
So why?
Well, you have to understand that when he ran, he took a man like Lynn Davis, who was a very popular man and a very good man, and ran him against our Secretary of State, Mr. Bryant. And they spent tons of money. And they did the same thing for treasurer, and the same thing for auditor. And they spent tons of money. And the only person he ever elected was Footsie Brett, lieutenant governor. And he never could really carry. They picked up a few seats in the House and Senate, not really that many. But it was more people voted for Winthrop Rockefeller, and they didn't vote for the Republican Party. And if people would vote for Rockefeller, and then that was it, they'd go back over. You're an old, what do you call them? Walter?
Ticket splitter.
Ticket splitters. You didn't, you know, think this is not a state of ticket splitters.
Yeah, just about every other southern state, you've had some little sustained growth since 1964.
It's true.
But here, it just went right back to where it was.
But I guess other states have maybe some powerful people, but when you put Mills, McClellan, Fulbright, and Bumpers all in here, it's just really hard to go against that.
Okay, what happens in the future when you take Fulbright out of it? Maybe Mills? And certainly at some point McClellan's...
Well, we'll probably get our parties very structured and organized and controlled, and the Republicans will take us over on the spot.
I don't know, but there are a lot of people, and you know, I've been for the Institute of Politics and discuss, you know, and they said, got to get this party organized. And my, again, my answer, I said before, for what?
Organized to do what?
Yeah. To do what? We're going to, you know, get rid of the one Republican congressman we've got, and then what are we going to do? It's really...
All right, since Faubus, has there been any this political, quote, political organization in the machine sense of in Arkansas? Do Bumpers have a machine?
Well, he has an organization. How does that sound? That sounds better to me. He has his group of supporters. He has never been a machine man. That's pretty, I mean, you know, he's never been a man who handled patronage through some one person in the county, and you had to go see some person to get a job or an appointment or anything.
Well, didn't the machine, such as it was, support Fulbright?
To a great extent, I believe they did. And the courthouses have never supported Bumpers, but he's successfully won without them, and he's proved that you can win without the courthouses. He did it the first time around. They supported Faubus. They took a walk in some of them came across, you know, he's going to be governor, but they had just about as soon had Rockefeller as governor as, you know, then they'd have had another shot at Rockefeller in 2 years. They figured if Bumpers wins, he's going to be there 4 years. I think that was their rationale in that. And this time, for the most part, there were a lot of notable exceptions of people that had been in politics a long time that were for Bumpers.
Are most of the county chairmen and other party officials for against Bumpers in 1970?
Yes.
So he proved that you could win without them.
And they were against him this time.
And the same thing with the courthouse. Yeah.
That's right. Both times.
But wasn't that one of the established myths of Arkansas politics that you couldn't win with that unless you had their support? Had many Democrats who didn't have the courthouse support won before statewide, before Bumpers did it?
Well, Walter, I don't know how to answer that because we had two senators that have been there 30 years, and we got one other Republican governor, one other Democratic governor, that takes us 20 years ago. And I'm just not an authority on history beyond 20 years ago in this state. Maybe I should be, you know, talk about George W. Donaghy and Joe T. Robinson, but I never really have gone into it that much, so.
Charles, could Dale Bumpers have been elected governor in Arkansas in 1970 without television?
I doubt it. He is a very good television candidate. He's great person to person. I mean, he just, and that's what he did this time. If you study the reporting records and what's that, you're going to find out he didn't spend very much money at all. Really, he didn't spend that much on TV. Probably had his heaviest spending in radio. Heavier radio. Very little direct mail.
How about 1970? How much direct mail?
Well, you're getting in an area that I really don't talk about. Just because I've got a client professional relationship, and I have no great compulsion to go around and say he mailed so many thousand pieces and we sold him like soap, and you know, it just sort of gets, I just really rather not get into that. you know, because that's a...
Well, let me ask you one more question. If you can't answer it, I understand, but do you consider the direct mail aspect of 1970, insofar as his campaign is concerned, to have been a significant part of that campaign?
Yes, I do.
To basically build his identity?
Well, I think it produced votes. I don't know how much it built his identity. Of course, he had an identity problem. 8 weeks before the election, he had less than 1% voter recognition. And so he obviously, I guess, I don't know how you separate the two.
Is he the first Democratic candidate for governor that was really a media candidate? Now, Rockefeller had done it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Obama hadn't done it. Johnson hadn't done it. Who was the guy after Johnson?
Well, now, you have to get, I don't agree with your premise that Rockefeller was a media candidate. He was a media candidate in that he spent money and he bought media by tons and tons and tons. But Bumpers is truly a media candidate in that he personally gets on there and asks you for your vote. And Fulbright had a lot of people saying, Dale's a good guy, but he's no Fulbright, you know. And Rockefeller had a printing press that was going to progress, and they talked about the progress. Then the press would stop, and they said, you want progress to stop. But they bought a lot of television, but he was not truly a media candidate. I think you have to separate that. When a man has personal appeal, that's a true media candidate. Not just that you have $5 million.
No, I don't mean just buying a lot of time and then
putting Rockefeller, first class production. Rockefeller was certainly no media candidate.
No, I mean the guy who actually used the media himself by being on the tube. And,
well, okay. Yeah. Bumpers was, but Rockefeller was not. He very, very rarely ever appeared in his television commercials. Documentaries would be like screens or showing him walking to the Capitol. Riding a horse. Gray horse.
A gray horse?
Stay away from my horses.